Good afternoon, and welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, May 14th. My name is Shona Osterhout. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll hear Jeff Brown interview Bria Schoenberg, who's here for Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. We'll hear about University of Alaska Southeast Community Day. We'll also hear about Brigham Young University's Living Legends Concert happening at Centennial Hall. And we'll talk about the STEM summer camps, all that and more on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Canadian government review panel has approved a plan for the Ontario Electric Utility to store nuclear waste deep underground near the Great Lakes. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, among those opposed to the idea are some Ontario First Nations.
The environmental assessment concluded that burying the hazardous nuclear material deep underground near the shore of Lake Huron is likely the best way to deal with the problem. Ontario Power Generation wants to bury hundreds of thousands of cubic meters of low and intermediate level nuclear waste more than 2,000 feet underground in the bedrock near the Bruce Nuclear Plant near Kincardine, Ontario. Experts who support the move say the rock is geologically stable and would provide a hermetic seal to prevent any radioactivity reaching the lake for tens of thousands of years. In its 430-page report, the panel found no significant adverse environmental risk to the lake, saying the relative position of the proposed project within the spectrum of risks to the Great Lakes is a minor one, adding, however, that it does need strict attention and regulation. But critics aren't buying it. More than 150 communities have condemned it, and environmental activists say it's an issue that affects millions of people on both sides of the border. Vernon Root is the chief of the Saugeen Ojibwe First Nation. He says the plan is the government sending a strong message to his people.
I guess you don't really care about our future, as you are going to potentially destroy the area with this burial.
Root says the burial site is located in traditional Saugeen Ojibwe territory. Root says he has a guarantee from the Ontario Power Generation that the project won't proceed without First Nations approval, and he plans to hold them to it. The final decision will be made by Canada's Environment Minister. She has 4 months to make the call. If it's approved, it could be in operation within 10 years. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A national law firm that specializes in Indian law is donating $3.5 million to improve medical care for tribal members. The decision comes after the firm helped win a case before the U.S. Supreme Court involving hundreds of millions of dollars for tribal health organizations. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes has more.
The law firm Sanosky Chambers Saxe Miller & Munson last year was one of the law firms that successfully fought for back payments to tribes from the Indian Health Service and Bureau of Indian Affairs. Attorney Lloyd Miller, a partner in the firm, says they wanted to give back to Indian country.
Since so much of our work involves health care issues, we wanted to focus our charitable contribution program on improving health care facilities, either entire clinics or acquisition of critical equipment such as CAT scans and MRI machines and the like.
$450,000 each is going to the statewide Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and to the Anchorage-based South Central Foundation. Miller says $200,000 each is going to the Choctaw, Cherokee, and Chickasaw Nations.
For the most part, we're working with tribes we know very well, tribes we've had a relationship with since the firm's founding. In the case of some of the tribes, we've worked with for 40 years.
Miller says in the coming year, the firm will be working on grants to other tribes in Oklahoma, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan is in Colorado for 2 days of events. On Wednesday, Duncan held a roundtable discussion with Native youth and a basketball clinic. Late last year, the Obama administration directed cabinet members to visit Indian country and hear directly from Native youth. The administration also launched the Gen-I initiative to open up opportunities for young Native people. The White House is also reaching out to them with the tribal youth gathering this summer in Washington, D.C. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Studio with Bria Skunberg, one of the musicians for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival this year. She's a multi-award winner, outstanding jazz artist, best trumpet, best female vocalist, and best group. You're not a slacker.
No.
What inspires you to play the trumpet?
Well, my first inspiration, my father was the one that encouraged me to play trumpet. He played a little bit back in high school. But my school system had a great band program, and I had good teachers that were putting recordings under my ears. So as I was learning how to play trumpet, I was listening to people like Louis Armstrong, and he can embody a lot of what inspires me to play the trumpet, not just a brilliant sound and great bands, great rhythm, but he was just a great person, a good human being who liked to bring people together. And so those are some of the main reasons why I like to play music, and trumpet has been my vehicle to all those opportunities.
Now, you're an active volunteer with the Louis Armstrong House Museum.
Mm-hmm.
What inspires you to look back rather than forward? Or do you able to do both at the same time?
I know several years ago I kind of came to this conclusion, like, we need to know where I'm playing music, but I don't know exactly why I'm playing it. And so by studying the history, it's just given me a more complete education of the music and a better understanding so that I can interpret it better. That's for sure. I mean, the history of jazz is the history of America, which is fascinating. I mean, I'm Canadian, but it's the way that what New Orleans came together and was a melting pot of a lot of different cultures and different influences, that's been kind of an endless source of inspiration for me to make music.
What are some of your inspirations besides Louis Armstrong?
Besides Louis Armstrong, I like trumpet players. I really like Clark Terry, who just passed away, unfortunately. Clifford Brown, Charlie Shavers, people that played kind of in the 1940s, some really hot swing stuff. Players that I like today, I mean, I'm a big fan of Wynton Marsalis. Roy Eldridge is great, and I also listen to a lot of vocalists. I do sing on my shows, but also learning the words kind of helps me interpret them on my instrument, too. So I really love singers like Anita O'Day, of course, Billie Holiday, and people with some real character.
You've played all over the world. What do you notice with the audiences?
Well, every place has its own feeling, and what's really special about this week's experience, and I call it an experience because we get really immersed in the community here. We're doing school outreach, we're doing different kinds of concerts, workshops with people of all ages, as well as performing. And so a lot of times we perform in a lot of different places, but you don't get that chance to kind of interact with the audience so closely. But I'll say that my experience with the audience in Juneau has been very, very positive so far. It's just very nice and engaging, ready to kick back and have a good time.
How was the Lucky Lady last week?
It was really fun. we had a jam session. So that's another way, yeah, that we got to meet people personally, but also having musically, too. There were some wonderful musicians that sat in from the city, and the Lucky Lady was a good hostess to us.
Besides being a performer, a singer, and a trumpet player, you're also a composer.
Mm-hmm.
What's your creative process for composing new tunes?
What I like to be able to do, for me to compose, it's hard to find the right amount of time in your schedule, especially to have that space, but in your mental space too, to let the ideas flow. So I need to kind of carve out time, you know, at least once a week, where I can just sit at a piano. Actually, sitting at the piano is where a lot of my composing happens, because you can fill out the harmony, you can come up with melodies. And in my ideal scenario, is just kind of having time to wait for an idea to come, and that's generally what will happen. That being said, like also living in a place like New York City, you're always hearing different things, different melodies, different ideas. I mean, I think that's coming in, and so when I am able to sit at the piano, that's when I can process that and start to pull them out. You know, going to Holland, they have a George Lewis Society. George Lewis was a New Orleans clarinetist, a revival player, and he traveled there, and now they worship him. And so it's interesting. They've been using, they emulate that kind of music. But yeah, traveling, you'll see fusions of cultures has been really interesting. I guess the one I'm thinking of right now is, you know, like Dizzy Gillespie and the people that fuse together Cuban music and jazz music. That's kind of one spin-off. And that way, too. It's pretty vast. Jazz is very vast.
Tell me about your trumpet.
My specific trumpet?
Yeah.
I play a Bach Stradivarius, and the Bach company has, I am an endorsing artist for them. They've been very kind to me so far. The trumpet that I play was actually a gift from my mentor and some fine jazz folks a few years ago. Warren Vache is a fine cornetist living in New Jersey, and he played a lot with Rosemary Clooney and Benny Goodman later, steadily for about 2 years. And during that time, he pulled some people together around my birthday one of those years and said, let's get you a new horn. So we went out to this great horn shop in New Jersey and tried at least 30, 40 horns and together. And that was actually a really great process to go through to find the right instrument with somebody there who had knew my playing.
I'm wondering if, like violins and wood instruments, you age increases its value. Is there anything like that with trumpets?
That's an interesting question. I think, you know, I guess with a wind instrument, we're putting air through the horn. It can get kind of dirty from time to time. So yeah, just have to make sure you keep your horn clean. So it's one thing to have a horn from the past, but it's another thing to see what condition it's in.
Tell me about your band.
Yeah, I have. There are three of us that are actually from British Columbia to start. We all live in New York City now, and two of those guys are basically met at college. Sean Cronin on bass, Evan Arntzen on clarinet and saxophone. They're both phenomenal people, and again, when I'm creating music and bringing in stuff like original material, it's good to have a place there where you can trust some people that have known you for a long time to interpret the music. So it's been great to share that music with them, and we've really kind of grown up together musically. On piano from Missouri is Dalton Ridenour, and I was first introduced to him in New York. And what makes him really unique is he has also has a great knowledge of the history of music. He plays ragtime piano stunningly, but it's also, you know, got his master's from Eastman. He can stretch within a lot of different styles. He has an endless palette, which is what you want in a piano player. And on drums is Darian Douglas, who's originally from Jackson, Mississippi, and he lived in New Orleans for 5 years. He played a lot with Ellis Marsalis, the piano player, and met him at a jazz festival in Ascona, Switzerland, where he was playing with the New Orleans brass band. And he was just about, he wanted to move to New York. So as soon as he got to town, he called me up and put him in the band.
What could the audience expect from your concert?
on Friday night. We're really looking forward to this. It'll be a culmination of a really exciting week that we've just had. Again, we've been doing lots of outreach with people and having some adventures. So I'm sure that inspiration will come through in the playing. Our music is basically rooted in, again, kind of American roots music, New Orleans jazz, blues. I think it's fun. It's really fun. It's really inclusive. Almost style cabaret. I narrate a lot of songs. There's a lot of singing, a lot of playing together. It's pretty vibrant. It's pretty vibrant music.
Rhea Skomberg, thank you so much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having me. Hope to see you on Friday at the show.
You and I came to try and start a life. Somewhat backwards, was it really fate or real estate that navigated us together?
And that's Bria Skonberg. You can check her out with her quintet tomorrow night. That's Friday night at the Jack downtown at 7:30 p.m. That's going to be a great show. Definitely check that out. In the studio with me now, our second guest of the day is Eric Scott, the director of Campus Life out at the University of Alaska Southeast. Thanks so much for joining me in the studio.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. So for people who don't know what a person that directs Campus Life, I mean, that's a pretty big, it's a pretty big title. What does that person do out at UAS?
Oh, boy. I think the shorter list would probably be the things that I don't have my hands in. Primarily, I oversee three main departments within our student affairs division, and that would be housing and residence life, campus recreation, and student activities. And then, of course, there's a cadre of other things that come along with being, quote-unquote, the campus life guy. So I find myself working very closely with our dining services, our facilities, other folks within the student affairs team. And then oftentimes my luckiest days are when I get to interact really closely with faculty.
So really you're making sure that students have the best experience possible at UAS.
Definitely. And I think that that's a great experience that's getting better and better every day.
Yeah. So there's a couple of really big things going on out there. As people probably know if they've been out there, there's a new freshman dorm actually on campus. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So in the fall, we had our first class of first-year students that got to live in our new residence hall. It's a beautiful facility, five floors with incredible views looking out over Auk Lake and the Mendenhall Glacier. So certainly, if you haven't been on a campus before, you'll want to come out and check out the view from the top floor. It's pretty incredible. And then out the back, of course, we have some filtered views of Auk Bay and a really quiet forest on the hill there. But it's great. It's a state-of-the-art residence hall, LEED certified, which means that it's built sustainably. And some of the really interesting design components that I find sort of ironic being on a campus is that all of the insulation was made from recycled crushed beer bottles. So a little bit of recycling there. And then, of course, doing our best to cycle, bring in local materials and build the facility in a way that sort of oriented it very well to the land. So it's just a absolutely beautiful facility and a great program that surrounds it. We have some wonderful staff that work with the students every day. And one thing that we know is that students who live on campus have higher GPAs than their counterparts that choose to live off. And that's a direct result of being so close to campus.
Yeah, well, you can get there faster, right, I'm assuming?
Not so much of an excuse not to go to class.
Exactly. And it is the first dorm that has ever been on campus. I mean, the other, the apartments are a little bit, I mean, they're close by, but they're a little bit off campus, correct?
Well, sure. We wouldn't call them off campus. We would say that they're just farther away from the center of campus because we definitely would consider them part of campus. But yeah, it's about a 10-minute walk. I do it every day down from the residence halls on the hill to the main campus. But certainly for first year students, it creates a much stronger connection having direct access to our dining service, having direct access to their professors, and having direct access to the other services that we provide. But we still think that our upper class housing on the hill is really, really nice as well, and a great way for students to sort of graduate into a bit more autonomy as they progress through their academic career.
Definitely. And there's a big, so it's been open for a little while now, but it hasn't had its kind of big thing yet. I mean, so there's a dedication. Is it a dedication coming up?
Absolutely. So Saturday morning, just before Community Day on campus, we'll have a dedication ceremony for the residence hall, and it will be the official ribbon cutting. So although we've been in there for about 9 months already, this will be us really celebrating the official completion of the residence hall, and really recognizing the future that it's going to have on our campus. It's been absolutely transformative, and so this is our opportunity to celebrate a year of success and hopefully many more years to come.
And what time can people arrive at that, and what can they expect?
So folks can arrive to grab some seats as early as 10 or 10:15 if they'd like. The ceremony will kick off at 10:30, and they can expect a fairly fast-paced ceremony that will have the opportunity to hear from our university leadership, some of the architects and project managers that worked on the project, a student that lived in the residence hall. Jasmine will be giving a short speech, and then we'll finish off the ceremony with a ribbon cutting, which is always really exciting and very symbolic. And then afterwards, during Community Day, from 11 a.m. until about 2 p.m., we'll be offering an open house and brief self-guided tours. And so folks will have the opportunity to explore the residence hall, check out a room, see what type of accommodations our students have, see some poster board displays on the programs that happen in the residence hall, as well as the facility design and construction process. And then in our seminar room on the fourth floor, have the opportunity to see a slideshow of construction photos. So if they maybe didn't spend time on campus during the construction process or didn't see what the space looked like before the construction, it can give them a much better idea of sort of what it took to build this facility in Juneau, Alaska.
And this dedication on Saturday is actually part of a really big day on the University of Alaska Southeast campus. It's part of Community Day on Campus, which is a joint collaboration between many organizations in town, a lot of arts nonprofits, and the university. And I'm hoping you can tell us about some of the highlights, because it's the culmination of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival as well, and they're a huge part of this day.
Certainly. Well, the university's partnership with Juneau Jazz and Classics goes back a long way and has some wonderful history. It's a really wonderful opportunity for folks to come out and spend time on our campus and see what we have to offer. Our admissions team will be there sharing the opportunities that folks may have if they want to come back to school or if they're a graduating senior and they're thinking about where they'd like to be. We're looking forward to great weather, and so our campus recreation team will be offering free boat rentals on Auk Lake. So if you've ever wanted to get on a sit-on-top kayak or try out a stand-up paddleboard, just make sure you bring a change of clothes and a towel, because that water is still pretty cold. I was in there last week, as a matter of fact, and tumbled right off one of the paddle boards into the water, and boy, you can feel the glacier when you're in there.
Definitely.
We'll also have an appearance by our mascot, Spike the Whale, along with a number of musical performances, and just too many to list all of the things that will be happening. And then our dining service will also be open. So if folks have wanted to try our new Lakeside Grill, we've just hired a new food service manager in the past year, and the food is delicious. So I think he'll be making some barbecue. Our Spike's Cafe will be open, offering coffee service. And just a lot of really wonderful performances by youth and adults alike through Juneau Jazz and Classics.
Yeah, I mean, the list is just incredible. You've got the Jam, the Glacier Valley, Riverbend, and Auk Bay schools combining to play strings, the Ursa Minor Strings, Suzuki Strings, Aurora Strings, the Juneau School District Art Show, Floyd Dryden Orchestra, the Thunder Mountain High School Orchestra, the Juneau Community Band. I mean, it is just one thing after the other. It's a great day. It's going to be sunny. You should definitely check that out.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'd love to have you out on the campus, and certainly it will be a lively event.
And the day starts off with this really great dedication of the new freshman dorms on the University of Alaska Southeast campus. Could you give us that time one more time, please?
Yep, 10:30 a.m. And as you drive onto the campus, it's the first thing that you'll see from the back loop entrance. It's the big green and gray residence hall, and you'll see we'll be setting up outside anticipating the beautiful weather, and we just can't wait to see you there.
Eric Scott, Director of Campus Life at UAS, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 14th of May, 2015. It was on this day in 1796 that a country doctor named Edward Jenner inoculated an 8-year-old boy with a vaccine for smallpox. It was the first safe vaccine ever developed. What was really, truly remarkable about it was that Jenner accomplished this before the causes of disease were even understood. It would be decades before anyone even knew about the existence of germs. He submitted his paper about inoculation to the Royal Society of London, which rejected it. So he published his ideas at his own expense in a little book, which came out in 1798 and which became a sensation. People read it, people talked about it, and gradually over time, the idea of vaccination began to catch on. It was on this day, 1607, the London Company explorers from England landed in what would become Jamestown, Virginia, the first English settlement in the New World. It was on the banks of the James River, 60 miles from the mouth of Chesapeake Bay. It's the birthday of the nature writer Hal Borland, Sterling, Nebraska, 1900. Went to work for the New York Times in 1937, and he wrote nature editorials for the Times, about one a week, until he died in 1978. And he kept on his office wall a cartoon from the New Yorker, which made fun of his editorials, a man brandishing a newspaper and shouting, "Here's another of those crackpot editorials about the voices of frogs shattering the autumn stillness." And it's the birthday of the travel writer and novelist Mary Morris, born in Chicago, 1947, published her first collection of short stories, Vanishing Animals and Other Stories, in 1979. Wrote memoirs of her travels across China and Russia, Mexico, and California. Also wrote about her trip down the Mississippi River with two river pilots named Tom and Jerry in a book called The River Queen. Her latest book is a novel, The Jazz Palace, which came out just last month. She wrote many different versions of the book, gave up on it, tried to forget about it. A few years later, she reread E.L. Doctorow's book Ragtime and said, "When I woke up the next morning, I knew exactly what was wrong with the novel. I knew exactly where the book ended, and I knew what I had to do to rewrite it." Here's a poem for today by Rosalind Brackenbury entitled Tamanrasset. On account of my knees, I thought a camel would be appropriate. I could be helped on and eventually off again. Have you ever got on a camel? They go down for you on their own padded knees and close their eyes while they wait for you to be set in place, like priests waiting for all the communicants to be done in some high church. Then they rise, tipping you, heaving beneath you, but you don't fall. You are suddenly feet up in the air, carried forward on the long sway of their stride. They will carry you across deserts, across days and datelines, until you arrive one far-off day in the city of Tamanrasset, where you have been waiting all your life to go." A poem entitled Tamanrasset by Rosalind Brackenbury from Bonar's Dog, published by Hanging Loose Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, May 14th, and it's 30 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me, I'm very lucky to have Joel Fanoy Moana and Janelle Christensen here from Brigham Young University's Living Legends, and they're here performing this fine evening. Thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, so for people who are, you know, not knowing what Living Legends is, it's really an amazing group you have. And I'm wondering if, Janelle, if you could give us a background on the group.
You bet. This is a group that actually started over 40 years ago and started with just Native American students, almost as a scholarship program, as a way to help them earn some money. And then it expanded. So now it's a group that's unique in all the world. It includes the Latin American, the Native American, the Polynesian cultures, all three of those combined into one extraordinarily fast-paced, energetic, beautifully staged performance with 36 students, all of those ethnicities. We have 12 from each of those different cultures. And we weave together a show. It's called Seasons because it tells the story of these cultures through their music and dance, which is the way they pass down their stories and their values. So we go from seasons of promise and plenty and prosperity and pride and rebirth. And it's just a great experience for our young people to share their cultures and to help the audience kind of see the beauty and the extraordinary magic of over 300 costumes, beautiful, authentic music and dancing.
So when did this program get started at BYU?
It started over 40 years ago, and it started small, and then it grew and expanded into the three cultures, and now they've been to over 50 countries. We've performed in when the Olympics were in Salt Lake a few years ago, in the opening ceremonies, and for kings and queens and orphanages, and really wonderful experiences all over the world.
And Janelle, you personally have been involved quite a while as well.
Yes, over 30 years. It's just too good of a job to walk away from.
And what kind of changes over those 30 years have you seen in both the performers and the performances?
Well, the students always get better. I think they come to the university better than we used to send them out after 4 years. I just think this is an elect, extraordinary generation of young people. And these particular students come not only extraordinarily talented and gifted in performing, but they have such a passion for their cultures that is, I think, what really comes through the even, you know, in addition to the beautiful costumes and music and dance. There is such a strong spirit of love and passion and respect for their cultures that it just really floods the auditorium.
Are you finding that students are actually being drawn to Brigham Young University because of this particular program?
I think in some cases that's very true. We have some students that have performed in powwows, some have performed at the Polynesian Cultural Center in Hawaii, some have performed in ballet folkloricos, and I would hope they see it as an opportunity to further perform and share their cultures. And some come to us simply because they want to learn more about their cultures. So we have a real mix of students.
And the show is tonight. At 7:30 p.m. That's at Centennial Hall.
Right.
And tickets are still available, although I did see lots flying through the Ethernet today. So that's great news. So
right.
Definitely come and check it out. Joel, you're both working on the administration side of getting this tour together as well as performance. How did you get involved?
Correct. When I transferred to Brigham Young University, I was introduced to the group, partly because half Polynesian, and I was introduced to the group to kind of what Janelle said, to that unique opportunity of continuing to practice, you know, the modern traditional values of our cultures. And something that really interests me is not only did I get to continue to honor my ancestors through cultural dancing, but also to be exposed to other cultures as well within the Latin and Native American cultures. And I think that's something that's been really unique to learn from at the same time and be able to teach not only to those in the group, but to those that we are able to be exposed to throughout the places that we travel.
And how long do you travel, or what's the tour schedule like? How does that work?
It depends really on where we're able to go each year. Sometimes it may range from 10 days to a couple of weeks. And it just depends on where the university gets clearance to go out and to perform. Because of the unique and diversity of the group, we try to get to different places throughout the world to share that culture from the different cultures that we show.
Could you talk a little bit about your fellow, I want to say castmates, but your fellow performers?
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. We have a few international students, and they bring obviously their enthusiasm, their energy to the group, and combining all that really makes the group unique and special to be able to have this particular show. And I think with that, that's what sets us apart, because we each bring something to the group to make it as special as it is, and to create that experience and feeling for those that come to the show that they might not be able to feel elsewhere, is because we have people from all over the world, and we're sharing, you know, our culture through music and dance. And being able to do that, I think, is a way of not only learning but teaching. And I think it's been something special for me, is to learn from somebody who's from Brazil, their culture, their ethnic dancing, compared to maybe somebody who grew up powwow dancing. You know, those things I think are what really make the group and make it special, because we all get to be exposed to it because we're with each other for 10 days or, you know, 3 weeks.
Janelle, could you talk a little bit about the specific performances within your show? So, because I know that here, I mean, there are a lot of Tlingit people.
Right.
Actually, there's a large Tongan population,
right,
as well. So I was just wondering, specifically,
yeah,
what who's represented in your show?
Well, and it varies a little bit from year to year, but this year we do have a beautiful Tongan dance that we know, and we have some students from Tonga who actually have relatives here. We've all already run into family members here, you know, in Juneau, and so we'll do some Tongan numbers. When we were here several years ago, we were in a little Yupik village, and we learned one of their traditional dances and even brought them down to our campus to record the music for us. So there will be, you know, representative dances from Alaska as well, with our Yupik dance, and then of course we will represent many of the islands, Hawaii and Tonga and New Zealand, and many of the countries in South America and Mexico, and then North American, in, you know, Indian powwow dances as well. So there's a big variety, which is what makes it so entertaining, so fast paced. Children of all ages, parents, grandparents. It's just, it's a wonderful, very visual, exciting and moving show for any age.
And what is your connection to Alaska? We were talking a little bit before we came on air, and I was like, oh, well, of course, that's how you got here.
Yeah. Well, we've had a wonderful relationship with the Federation of Peer, that has brought us to Juneau, and both brought us to Fairbanks and Anchorage several times to perform in their big conferences that they have there.
The AFN concerts.
AFN concerts, mm-hmm. Yes. And so we've just formed some beautiful friendships, and so we haven't been to Juneau. This is the first time to Juneau, and it is so spectacularly beautiful. But every time we have come to Alaska, I think we felt a very special connection through our students, through our Native American students particularly, also through a wonderful opportunity to have some great role models on both sides, people we meet here and people that we bring here too. I just feel like we connect very well with these precious people up here. We love Alaska.
Janelle, could you tell us one more time when the show is?
The show is at Centennial Hall tonight at 7:30. Plenty of seats in that big auditorium. It'll be a wonderful experience. I hope that they can all come.
Joel and Janelle with Brigham Young University's Living Legends. Check that out tonight at 7:30 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Thank you so much for coming on air.
And thank you. Our pleasure.
Have a great show.
Thanks.
Raven Correspondence School is a quality statewide K-12 homeschool program and is currently taking enrollment for the 2015-2016 school year. With Raven Correspondence, students will have a wide variety of curriculum choices with certified teacher support, as well as easy access to local resources and activities. For enrollment information, visit ravenschool.com or call 888-99-RAVEN. This message is brought to you by Raven Correspondence School. There's no place like home.
Support for programming comes from Alaska Seaplanes, with floatplane service to Angoon, Tanaki, Pelican, and Elfin Cove. Alaska Seaplanes, flying at a higher standard. Details at flyalaskaseaplanes.com.
This is Bird Note. Humans have long found ways to entice birds out of hiding. This wooden call gets a tom turkey's dander up to see who has the gall to invade his territory. and humans compete to hear who can most convincingly bring ducks and geese into close range. And many birds are just hard to see, like the Sora rail. Its brown mottled plumage blends perfectly with the dense marsh grass where it lives. So, how can we get a good look at this denizen of the undergrowth? One way is to play a bird call app on a smartphone or other electronic device. Birds in residence may wonder who's there, a rival perhaps, or a new mate, and they'll come out of hiding to see. But playing bird calls on an app may have its drawbacks. Stress hormones rise in male birds responding to long playbacks. So it's best to avoid having a lot of people use an app for the same species at the same site. It's the lengthy singing of an unexpected rival that causes the stress. Out in the field, if you're by yourself, use only brief playbacks and move on if you don't get a quick response. And during breeding season, it's probably a good idea to hold the phone. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, May 14th, and it's 41 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me is Rebecca Souza, here to talk about really some very cool things happening this summer.
Yep, this summer, and I'm hoping to share a bit about what's happened this spring, too. I've got some exciting news coming back from a trip to St. Louis with Alaska's robotics teams. And get to say that we had an Alaskan team take home a world championship trophy.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a team from Fairbanks for our robotics program. A high school team that does the first tech challenge was actually one. They're the most inspiring team in the world.
So what does that mean? What do you have to do to be the most inspiring team in the world?
Well, one, they built an amazing robot, and they've been doing this since the team got together for the first time when they were all in third and fourth grade. And they went down and competed in Lego League, but they stuck together, kept at it. So their engineering skills are amazing. They have a team member who is the youngest ever official trainer for LabVIEW from National Instruments. They collaborate with roboticists from all over the world, including folks in Australia. They've traveled once to Australia for a robotics tournament, and they're going down again this summer for another one. And then the big thing for this program is also all of that outreach that they do as a team, going out, presenting at schools, mentoring younger students that want to go into engineering, computer programming, and just being those sort of great community organizers, community leaders that we want to see more of in Fairbanks, in Juneau, Alaska, and obviously in the world.
You know, it's a really amazing thing that Fairbanks can represent. And there's a Juno team. How many Juno teams went too?
So we had four Juno teams in the program this year, and I believe three out of the four went up to the state competition. We didn't have any move on to the world championship, but we've got some really good rookie team members and team members that still have a couple years left in high school. So I'm very optimistic about what Juno can do in the next couple years.
And is there a way for students who are just so piqued by this, because now I kind of just want to come build robots. I'm just going to quit all my jobs. I'm going to come build some robots with you. I hope that's okay. How do people get involved with that?
Well, it's the perfect segue into summer camps. And we have opportunities for kids as young as second grade all the way up to adults to get involved in building some robots this summer. So the first for adults, we've got our corporate challenge coming up, and that is for the first Lego League. So we normally run the program where kids build and program Lego robots in grades 4 through 8. And as part of our fundraising and an effort to recruit mentors, we give adults a chance to get into the action. So for $250, you can put together an adult team or get a corporate sponsor to have a corporate team. And we'll give you just 1 month. We provide you with the robot, the field, the software, everything you need to get going. We even give you a bit of a head start on where the kids have to work from in the fall, and then invite you out to the Baranoff. This year's competition is going to be on Friday, June 19th, and it's sort of more of an adult-friendly event than the kids' competition. You can grab a beer. There's a little bit more heckling than we ever encourage with the kids, and it's a really fun night and a great way to support, you know, like I said, just this world-class program and a chance for kids in Alaska to do something really special.
Well, it's a great point that you also mentioned it's a good time to build mentorships because these students have to learn from someone. So who are the people that are helping these teams build these awesome robots?
They're angels in the community. They are very, very dedicated volunteers that do not need a technical background. They just need to be willing to put in the time to learn the basics of the program. We have a range of teachers to parents to Girl Scout troop leaders who've taken this on and really just become dedicated coaches. When I go out and talk to people and try to recruit mentors, I always have to say it's a hard thing to get into because it's not like getting a basketball coach or a soccer coach who's grown up playing the sport and knows a ton of drills and understands what a practice looks like. This is brand new to all of us. We don't have a single coach out there who had ever been to a practice before they started coaching. But we run clinics, we train them, and really the number one thing I recommend for someone who's interested in coaching is to try out the corporate challenge. And that way you get your experience, you're on a team, and then you can say, all right, here's how we make this work for kids too.
So what camps can the kids take this summer to get involved?
So the camps are all on our website, stemak.org, or you can find it through the Juneau Economic Development Council's website. And we have a whole range of them. So just straight up Lego robotics, starting with the WeDo robotics, which is for I'm looking at my poster and it doesn't even have it, but grades 2 to 3, these are all out at Thunder Mountain, and that's August 3rd through 6th. And then we also have Lego robotics for EV3 robotics, and that's for grades 4 through 8. And on the website, some of them are sold out, but we have quickly growing wait lists, and we've been able in the past to open up an entirely separate section of camp if the wait list fills up. So don't be discouraged if you get on there and it looks like camps are sold out. Please put your name on the wait list, and we'll see what we can do. And be optimistic because we've been able to create good opportunities in the past. Then if Legos aren't your thing, we do have other options too. We partner with NOAA on a camp called Sun to Sea that's been happening for a really long time. And in that one, it's much more marine science based. Kids get out on a boat. They do some really cool dissections. They learn about what to do in cases of oil spills. They learn about currents. And then there's also the atmospheric aspect, and they get to go visit the weather service. And that one is coming up really soon. It's June 1st through 6th. And again, that camp is sold out now, but there's a wait list. And I really encourage folks to get their names on there if they're interested in the camp. We also have a special Girls Rock Summer Science Camp just for girls, and two sessions of that, one for younger students and one for older. They learn to solder. There's going to be some cool physical science. We've got our instructor from last year who's a physics teacher out in Kodiak who's coming back just to lead that camp. And then the final one is Sea Perch Underwater Robotics. And in that one, every single student gets to build and take home their very own underwater ROV. Yeah, they're amazing. And we had them out at the Maritime Festival, and I know everyone that stopped by there and played with them just had a great time. So if you want to have your own, you can come and build them again with a certified electrical engineer by your side to help you troubleshoot and learn how well the things work with that.
That's great. Rebecca, if people want to get more information, talk to you, sign up for the camps, where can they do that?
So stemak.org has all the information, links to the summer camps, online registration, payment, and to that corporate challenge, or just give me a call, 523-2334. And I'll be happy to talk you through. We can register you over the phone, answer questions about what camps would be best.
Well, congratulations on bringing home a pretty big win for the Fairbanks Robotics team.
Yep, we're pretty proud of them and trying to give them all the accolades that they deserve. I don't know that robotics gets the headlines that if we had an Alaska football team go down and win a worldwide award like that. So we just want to make sure that they get all the shout-outs they deserve.
That's right. And you can also, if you're an adult listening in and you think robots sound really cool, you can also get involved in this corporate challenge. Also contact Rebecca Souza for that. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Now if you see my baby is oh so fine. She's long and lean and never mean. She tastes like cherry wine. She's my baby. She kind of-
have to run away from me. It's a mystery why I love her more today than I loved her yesterday when I thought that she'd come back to me.
And that's Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. You can check them out as part of the Juno Jazz and Classics final closing concert. That is going to be a great time. They're so much fun. My friend knows one of them, one of the Voodoo Daddies. I feel like I should go. Anyway, Nancy DeCherney here with Arts Up. How are you?
Well, I'm better.
Good. It's nice
to
see you.
It's a glorious day. I almost got lost coming across the street. All right, so we have so much to talk about. Shall we just, like, spin through it as fast as we can?
Yeah.
Okay, so tonight there is the Paul Rosenthal and Victor Asuncion in recital out at Chapel by the Lake, Canterbury Tales, or Geoffrey Chaucer's Flying Circus, Living Legends over at Centennial Hall, and Seven Homeless Mammoths. Rock, scissors, paper won't even cover it.
No, exactly. And of course it's sunny.
And of course it's sunny, so you really need to be barbecuing. There's this, let's see, what else? The grand opening of the Walter Soboloff Center building is tomorrow. And it's really try to make time to be part of that. A great thing in our community.
What time is that?
It starts at like 8 or 9 in the morning.
But it's an all-day event, yeah. You know, and so it's definitely, yeah. You know, it's definitely get by there, take a moment out of your day to welcome that beautiful new space.
Just gorgeous. So then there's something that's happening on Friday night from 7 to 9, and I'm a little confused because there's two things happening in the same location, and I was unable to find out which is which. But we have a Northern Limits slideshow at the Rockwell Ballroom, and we have the Wish Canadier Spring Showcase at Rockwell. Now, I know they have two spaces. I just want to make sure that the two spaces are...
I think the Wish K is downstairs.
Oh, okay.
And I think
the
other one is upstairs.
Okay, then we're safe.
Yes.
Safe. All right, there's the Canterbury Tales again. Bria Skonberg is the jazz over at the Jack. Looks lovely. Seven Homeless. There's Comedy Weekend out at 9:07. There's Wigging Out, a fundraiser for Juno Pride. That's from 9 p.m. to 11 at Gold Town Nickelodeon.
And they're playing Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
All right.
I love it.
It's one of my favorites, too. So we have a big day. It's Community Day on campus, and boy, is the weather going to be fabulous. And I just am going to run through the list of things that are happening because there's not only is there music all day long from 11 to 4, they're also inaugurating the grand opening of the new dorm. That's at 10:30. But we have a fish and game, the Alaska Youth Choir. Selena Beerley is out there with Native Jewelry. There's Barefoot Bouncy House with a couple of houses. There's Face Painting, Catholic Community Services, Cindy Sewing and Growing's Copa. It's going to be out there with their ice cream. They're going to have Baranoff Brewing beer, root beer floats, and Mexican cola floats. The DIPAC folks will be there with their touch tank. Front Street Cafe will be there with burgers. Full Cup Studios is doing a fundraiser for the Taylor White Foundation. The Castano Humane Society will have little dog tags that you can get and then go over to the Juno Makerspace and put your own dog's name in there. The Juno Makerspace is going to be making toolboxes that you can help make. There's the Juried Student Art Show out there. The Arts Council will be there, of course. Juno's Dance Theater, Juno Jazz and Classics, the Makerspace I've mentioned, the Montessori people will be selling pansies and violets. There's storytelling. There's Kai's Cotton Candy. The Lakeside Grill is going to be open. There's a fine art painting place. The weather people are going to be out there to tell you how to predict the weather, for heaven's sake. Who knew? The Peregrine Booster Club is going to have tackle boats. There's a piece of pie collage and fabric arts. Riverside Herbs. Somebody was trying to get a service dog. There's smoothies. There's Spike's Coffee. There's a longest day concert. The UAS people are going to have paddle boats for free on the lake. I mean, it's going to be fun. So do come out, and we're going to do the mosquito market.
Oh, cool. What time it start? I know the ribbon cutting is at 10:30 or the dedication, mm-hmm. but when and does community day campus?
It starts at 11 and it ends around 3:34, 4 o'clock. So
always
and there's
a
just
fun
live
time.
Music the whole time. And like I said, Mosquito Market is one of these sort of like pop-up deals. Put your junk in the trunk of your car, drive out to the parking lot, open up the back of your car, and have a garage sale right there outside. Are we having fun yet or what?
My life has been complete now that Nancy DiGiorni said junk in your trunk. All right, what else is going on?
There's Girls on the Run. Of course, 10 to 1 on Saturday.
Is that their 5K?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And there's a 10 to 2, there's a special Olympics torch run at Twin Lakes. There's a family farm day at Swampy Acres. So on your way to community day, you can ride ponies if you like. Oscar Beecham fundraiser at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center. We've got, as you mentioned, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is the finale. Oh, my goodness. And then you've got the Mammoths and Comedy Weekend again. And on Sunday, the Arts Council is going to go to its summer hours. We'll be open every day, 9 to 6. So we hope to see you come in and visit, sit on the lawn or whatever. On 7:15 a.m. to 12 noon is a Springtide Scramble. I think that's a run from Fish Creek. There's the Last Champ Mining Museum is open. There's a literary happy hour at the back room at Coho's. This is all on Sunday. I mean, come on, people. Isn't that a day of rest? Not anymore. Okay, what else have we got going on? Oh, there's the House of Wickersham is open now these days. There's a roundtable. The Arts Council is having one of its roundtables on the 19th. And Eleanor Oidna, who is the project manager for the Willoughby Arts Complex, will be the guest speaker. If you have questions or want information about where we are on that project, you can come to that at 5 at the Jack. Coming out, stories of action and reaction at K2. Let's see. Wednesday. It seems like there was something exciting happening.
Wednesday is Molly Lewis and Marion Call
concert. There it is. I knew that was
fun. It's at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. It's at 7:30 p.m. That's going to be awesome. It sounds like Molly is a longtime friend of Marion's, and, you know, we love Marion and her music anyway, so we must like her friend.
Yeah, exactly. And it's called Geek Girls in Concert, so you just got to go to that. They're having an old-time jam over at the Alaskan Hotel. So it's a full week of fun, and the weather's supposed to be fabulous. I want to see everybody out with their suntan lotion on and their sun hats because we know that Alaskans are not prepared for this weather.
Public service announcement from Nancy DiGiorni. I love it. You can get your arts information.
And your sunblock.
If people want this extensive calendar, because we're in the last weekend of Juno Jazz and Classics.
Oh, my goodness.
We've just got a lot going on, and my head just exploded a little bit listening to you. List them all. Where can we find that information?
It's on jahc.org and ktoo.org. So let's want to see out at something. Hope to see you on Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday is really a great day for
everything. Yeah, it's beautiful
everything.
Out there. You get your picnic, get your sun in.
Go paddleboarding
on the lake.
Love
it. Oh, my gosh.
The one, the only, Mrs. Nancy DiGiorni, thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon today. It's Thursday, May 14th. My name is Shona Osterhout. Tune in tomorrow to KTOO, same time, 3 p.m. Thank you so much.